The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome all of you to the second half of the program, and we won't waste another second because our next coach has a game to prepare for. He is Shane Beamer of the University of South Carolina, heading to Athens this weekend. Coach, great to have you here. Congratulations on the season so far, although I might add you made a lot of fans nervous with that ending at East Carolina. Congratulations and thanks for being here.
No, thanks again for having me on. Always enjoy it and appreciate you having me. And you're right, it was a battle up there, but it wasn't always pretty, but just so happy for our young men in the program, our staff, everybody associated with Carolina football. It was a great win in a tough environment that wasn't always pretty, but we kept battling, we kept fighting, and we found a way to win when it was all said and done.
Coach, I don't think anyone thought that would be an easy game. And a lot of people did a double take when they saw you guys were heading to East Carolina. But now that it's over and you did get what you went there for, what is the takeaway from a road win to get you ready for even a more difficult road visit?
Yeah, no, great point. I mean, I knew what to expect going into Greenville. I've been there way too many times. I know what kind of program they have there. They had 20 returning starters coming back off last year's team. Mike Houston, their head coach, has been slowly building that program back to where they expect to be, and this is kind of the year they've been shooting for. And they played App State the week before. That score was a little misleading. They had a couple touchdowns get called back because of some penalties. And, you know, it's a program that's beaten the University of North Carolina three times since 2013, I believe, NC State twice in that time, Virginia Tech twice since 2014. So we knew what to expect, and we prepared our guys for it all along. And really, for me, it was just learning what a bunch of fighters we have on this team. There's not a lot of teams in college football, or I should say this, I think there's a lot of teams in college football that would have lost that game with you know, being down 14-0 early, turning the ball over as many times as we did in the first half. And even at the end of the first half, East Carolina had a 1st and 10 on the 37-yard line going in to score to make it a 3-score game, and ended up flipping it around and going in 14-7 at halftime because we returned the interception. So just so proud of our guys. Obviously, we know that Georgia's not East Carolina. We got a unbelievably huge challenge this week, but I did learn that we've got a bunch of guys on our team that will never flinch and not look at that scoreboard. They just love to compete and didn't panic when they had every opportunity to panic on Saturday.
And Coach, it is a dangerous position to be in when you fall behind on the road and you're still feeling your way through with a new program. What goes through your mind? How do you internalize something like that? You are a head coach now and it's all on you.
Yeah, no, great point. And for me, it was just trying to just maintain. We talked to the players all week about maintaining our composure and poise no matter what happened. And I really tried to do a great job of that on Saturday. I realize now as the head coach that everyone is looking at me. And I've got to do a great job of just maintaining my composure. And I won't lie, it was certainly hard at times with some of the things that were happening in that game. You know, but we told our players, adversity is going to come. Like, we didn't face any adversity the first week against Eastern Illinois. And that's no disrespect to Eastern Illinois, but things went about as well as they could have that first game. We knew that we were going to face some adversity, and we would face it early. And we talked to our guys about how are we going to respond. And it just so happened that we faced it on the very first play of the game when they hit a big play for a touchdown. I didn't think that we were going to have to handle the storm for 3.5 quarters, but we told them however long it takes, just keep playing. And really proud of the way that our team played in the last 17 minutes. If you look at the last 2 minutes of the third quarter and then the fourth quarter, we made big plays in all three phases, and we've certainly got to continue that going forward.
There'll be a lot of familiarity this weekend, to say the least. You know the territory. You've worked there. One of your quarterbacks is from there. First of all, let's talk about the quarterback situation. It has not just been SEC news, but it's been national news over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, obviously Zeb has started the last two games, and credit to him. You know, it's a great story. He did not play well early on, and he'll be the first to tell you that. But he made some big-time throws as the game went on Saturday for touchdowns and making some changes at the line of scrimmage and seeing one-on-one coverage and being able to take advantage of it. And then the thing with him, he's just so poised and confident and calm and cool at all times. Even on that last drive, he had everything under control. He was talking to us and communicating as coaches on the sidelines during timeouts, and he continues to get better. I mean, the fact of the matter is he was a graduate assistant, you know, less than a month ago, and now he's started in 1-2 college football games. So he keeps getting better. And then Luke Doty continues to get more and more healthy. We practiced last night, and he went through the practice. He did more in practice last night than he has since he got hurt, and we fully expect him to be 100% on Saturday night over in Athens also.
So every SEC coach today that has two good quarterbacks is asked the question, how do you determine, how do you decide how to divvy up playing time?
Yeah, for us, it's always about competition, and you know, certainly Luke was our starter before he got hurt, and we compete in practice, and at the end of the day, it's my job to do what's best for the South Carolina football team to give us the best opportunity to win Saturday night in Athens. So we'll see how practice goes, you know, starting tomorrow when we get back out on the practice field, and then Wednesday, Thursday, and into the weekend. But yeah, I feel confident in all of our quarterbacks, whether it's Zeb or Luke or anyone else we have on our roster. We've got to play well at quarterback, but the other guys around him, the other 10 on offense, certainly have to play well no matter who's out there at quarterback for us.
Coach, I remember the day you were hired, or at least not very long after that, you paid tribute to Will Muschamp, and it wasn't surprising knowing you and your football lineage, but you don't often hear that. Now he is part of the Georgia program, and I'm sure it will be emotional for him before the game, seeing a lot of young men that he recruited. How are you, or are you addressing that with your team?
Yeah, you know, on Sundays after the game, we kind of review the previous game. That's what we did yesterday. We really didn't get into a whole lot of Georgia. The players are off today. The staff has been working all day. So the first time I'll see them as a team will be tomorrow morning when they come back for our team meeting when we introduce Georgia. And, you know, I don't feel like I need to say a lot about it. I mean, it kind of is what it is. It's not the first time a coach has been at a program and now is at a different program in the SEC. It's happened with Coach Muschamp at, you know, other stops that he's been at. It's happened with Kirby coming from Alabama to Georgia. But certainly, you know, Will has great ties here to the University of South Carolina, cares about this place. I've got tons of respect for him. He's been very good to me since I've gotten the job here and been very willing to help me if I had any questions about the lay of the land here or personnel or anything, and which I appreciate. He's a great football coach, and I know he's a great resource for Kirby and his entire staff and program there at Georgia.
Coach, before you go, I know coaches cannot get hung up on criticism or the critics, but I do want to ask you about one person in particular, and we've joked about him in the past, and that's your dad. And I'm really curious, and I think the audience is as well, what type of critique the old man has given the young scion of the family after two performances.
He's actually pretty positive. It's my 8-year-old son and my youngest daughter that are my harshest critics. I come home at night, and if they're still awake, our youngest daughter wants to know why I'm still not at work, how come I'm not in meetings still. And then my son was with me in Greenville Saturday, as was my dad. My dad was there. He was very congratulatory and positive after the game, and just he did talk about just how proud he was of the team and the way they battled, and he's been to Greenville many times as a head coach at Virginia Tech playing East Carolina. He knows what a tough place that is to play, but he just patted me on the back and gave me a hug and told me how proud he was of the team and how they played, and thought that was a great test to grow from. And then I got on the bus with my 8-year-old son, and the first thing he wants to know is he's yelling at me about some of the play calls on offense and wanting to know why we ran the ball on third down one time instead of throwing it on third down. So my dad's the positive guy in the family. My wife is positive. It's my three children that keep me humble.
Okay, well, forget your father. We'll just start booking your kids on the show to evaluate South Carolina. Coach, I know it's a busy week. We'll be watching Saturday night, and thanks so much for making time for us.
You bet, always, and thanks for having me. Have a great week.
You got it, Coach Shane Beamer. Man, I mean, everyone goes home, and we've all heard criticism, but from your kids? I mean, you expect your wife, you expect maybe your parents, especially one like his, but I don't know about 8-year-olds coming after their dad on the play selection. We are going to take a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285 right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Well, a bombshell coming out of Southern California just moments ago. The athletic director at USC, Mike Bone, has announced that Clay Helton, after two games, is out. Two games this year is out as a USC football coach. Many were speculating that he needed to have a big season to survive, but one of the coaches that has lived on the hot seat is now gone. And you talk about a big time opening, and a big time opening that we'll speculate on all year. That is exactly what they have. He has named an interim head coach. And that is, it's not shocking when you consider what a lousy coach Clay Helton has been for most of his tenure at USC. It's just shocking that it happened after one bad loss. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. And let's check in with Garrett in Pennsylvania. Hello, Garrett.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's some pretty big news out in Southern California. But, yeah, I'm a Penn State grad. My granddad is an Aggie, though, and my dad grew up in College Station, so even though I'm up north, I'm a pretty regular listener to the show and have some interest in the SEC, so I really enjoy the show. You guys do a good job.
Thank you very much.
Couple questions, and Greg kind of hit on a good amount of it in the last hour. Obviously, up here, we're bringing in Auburn this weekend, and my first question would be, how much can we take away from Auburn's good play, considering who they played against the first couple weeks? And then I guess I follow up with, from everything that I've been reading and hear from, granted, mostly Auburn circles, there doesn't seem a ton of consideration as to, the environment that they're going into this weekend. So do they know what they're getting into when they come up here in this environment? And then what do you think of those first couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, Garrett, I don't know how you can be in the college football platform and not know the whiteout. I made this point a couple of years ago, and I can't remember if it was 2 years ago or 4 years ago. I think it was 4 years ago. But I was on a plane. I'm pretty sure it must have been in Philadelphia. Yeah, it was in Philadelphia. I was changing planes coming back from Connecticut on a Sunday afternoon, and the entire plane was filled with Ohio State fans who had been to the game the night before. And I talked to 15 or 20 of them at the airport and subsequently on the plane, and they all said it was the greatest atmosphere they had ever experienced. And for an Ohio State fan to make that concession about a Penn State whiteout is resonated loudly with me. And I'm sure that they understand what they're getting into. But by the way, you know, seeing it on television, hearing about it, and experiencing it are two different things.
Right. Yeah. And you know, there's a number. You know, Penn State's something like 8-8 in whiteout games. The real number to me is what they are against the spread. You know, there's something like 13-3. We're always playing Ohio State, and you know, Ohio State is the Alabama of our conference up here in the Big Ten. And so, the fact that those games are always close.
Yeah, but I'm curious, who does – I mean, I realize they're playing Auburn this year. You can only play Ohio State every other year. What other games usually qualify? Would Michigan qualify for this?
Or? We're looking forward to having them up here.
Okay. Thanks for the call. We are going to talk more about that game later in the week. It's certainly a big game. And I was talking to Matt Barry of ESPN yesterday on his podcast. And he really believes Auburn can win this game. And you heard Greg McElroy say the same thing a few minutes ago. Eddie is up next in Georgia. Hello, Eddie.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
We're doing great. Thank you.
I'm about 30 minutes behind you, so I hope I match up with your talking there. But first-time caller, woo, 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 woo.
Well, it's great to hear from you.
Anyway, I got a couple of questions for you. Number one, I think my thing was stole from me. The kitty cat with the American flag, woo, loved it, especially on the 9/11 time. So I'm just going to throw that in. I want to know if you were surprised with the score of I was surprised that you was the score of the Hogs. Did that surprise you, any of them walking away with it? I know that.
Yeah, no, I did not expect them to. I mean, I thought they had a really good chance of winning, but I didn't think they would dominate. And quite frankly, they did. I mean, that game was it started off scary when they fumbled the punt, but after that, they really put it together and never ever look back. Hey, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's move along. And how about Wade in Texas? Hey, Wade, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. How are you doing today?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Wonderful. I just want to say I've been listening for years. I'm a big fan of the show. Got a couple questions for you. First would be backstory is that I went to Alabama and I currently live in Texas. You live in Texas, and I'm sure you hear from your callers all the time. A&M every year seems to be going to the national championship right before the season starts. That's what my cousin Cole is very adamant about. But my question for you, Paul, for them going to Boulder this weekend and, you know, thoughts out to Haynes King and his fractured ankle, do you think that was a testament to the defense of how good they are? Or do you think with Jimbo Fisher's recruiting that there is enough talent on the team to where there should have been much more points on the board in establishing the run game and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I felt that they woefully underperformed. And having said that, it did tell me I just don't know enough about Colorado in terms of, you know, trying to believe how good they were. And I know Greg McElroy mentioned the altitude and that is a factor, but it shouldn't have been a significant factor. And I'm a little concerned. You know, the Haynes King situation is a double-edged sword. Certainly, Calzada is a serviceable replacement. He won the game. Without that, I'm not sure they would have won. But I do think it sets up the entire season in a different way, especially with the Arkansas game looming.
Right. And then my final question, Paul, as far as the Texas-Arkansas goes, you know, Texas comes out and they're about to join the SEC and everyone's really excited. And then they take this loss to Arkansas, which, frankly, if we're looking at the past, has been a lesser of the SEC teams. You know, how do they handle that going forward? And, you know, what happens in 2025 or whenever they join, if they lose to Arkansas and then Alabama's up, A&M, Ole Miss, et cetera, et cetera. And do you think, you know, 10 years down the line, recruiting takes over as far as players wanting to live and play in Austin and represent the Longhorns instead of Texas A&M?
Wait, I don't think this is cataclysmic to the Texas program. We're talking about a coach that's two games in, And while it was a bad loss and while everyone's asking the question, do you think they know what they're getting into? Of course they know what they're getting into. And it just so happened that they lost to Arkansas versus Alabama next year, which is on the schedule. I think Steve Sarkisian is a really good coach who can only do so much in the transition, and I believe he is going to recruit the type of athlete that they need. I certainly hope so. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's talk to Shannon, who is up next. Hello, Shannon.
Hello, Paul. Great weekend of football, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. Thank you.
Paul, I have a simple question for you, and maybe you can help me out. Why is it that the best quarterback for the Florida Gators is always the one coming off the bench?
Well, I think the thing – sometimes it is not accurate. I think in this case, the Richardson mania started a few weeks ago, and it just simply has been building to a crescendo. And Emory Jones has not lived up to the billing that we all told that he would adhere to. So I think there are some pretty serious question marks.
So this is my question, Paul, because I heard you say something earlier about Emory Jones lacking confidence, that he's lacking in confidence. And I would argue that Felipe Franks was lacking in that same area. And I'm just curious if Mullen is the quarterback whisperer that the sports media is proclaiming to be, how come his best quarterback's not the one that's on the field, and how come the starting quarterback's always shook for confidence?
I don't know, because as our 14-year-old told us a minute ago, you know, he was slow to understanding Kyle Trask. I mentioned an old story about that, and I should have mentioned the Kyle Trask-Felipe Franks story as well, because what would have happened if Felipe Franks had not been hurt?
I stand on that to this day, that if Felipe Franks would not have been hurt at Kentucky, Kyle Trask would have not seen the field. And my question is, are we really evaluating our talent and putting the best kid on the field? I mean, it's – you know, and then Mullen tries to play it off when he was asked about it by Cole Kublik. You know, he didn't know what he was talking about and tried to be real coy and everything. But the obvious thing here is the best kid not on the field. And I can't believe that's only during the games that Anthony
I didn't hear that answer. But I thought the answer he gave today left something to be desired in terms of – yeah, I mean, he was trying to compare it to a neurosurgeon over at Chan's Hospital. I mean, come on. I mean, Dan Mullen has been down this road a couple of times already. Not that too far in the past. So, I thought it was kind of a snarky answer, but ultimately, I think we're going to see a lot of Richardson on Saturday. Thanks for the call. We have a star running back from the University of Kentucky. In 30 minutes, we've already talked to Shane Beamer. We talked to Bobby Bones about the Arkansas win. A lot of conversation here, including Greg McElroy, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back. Repeating again the big story of late this afternoon, Clay Helton has been fired at USC. His team not only lost to Stanford, which is a pretty bad team, but was humiliated. And the big concern was the program had no direction. The bigger concern was that there would just be nobody at the next couple of games once they got back home. I think this is smart. There was no way he was going to survive. The cat calls were beginning. And, you know, we talked to Mike Bone, I think, about a year ago on our program. And when you're an athletic director and this is not your guy, you're better off just getting, you know, just cleaning it out. Don't give that guy a chance to save his job like he did a couple of years ago. Just fire him, make a change. But it's also interesting to think about the dysfunctionality of Southern Cal, which is one of the biggest names in college football history. After Pete Carroll left, Lane Kiffin was there. He was fired on the tarmac in September of 2013. Ed Ogeron came in as the interim coach, got let go at the end of the year, even though many felt like he probably should have retained the job. Sarkisian comes in. He went down in flames and was fired, and now Helton has been fired, all in a relatively short period of time. So who will replace him? The names, the possibilities will be endless. Until a year ago, the hot name was Urban Meyer. I think you can scratch that off the list. Not that anyone would really want Urban Meyer right now, but you'll hear everyone under the sun mentioned for this job. Let's get back to the calls at 855-242-7285. And Benny is in Lake Charles. Hello, Benny.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
We're doing great.
You probably talked about this already, you know, during the season, but this is my first time actually watching the show during the season. But my question is, do you think that Coach O will survive this season at LSU, or do you see a coaching change, like mid-season coaching change or something? And with the news of John Emery not being able to return, you know, for the season, do you think that'll have some kind of impact on his future?
Well, Benny, I think John Emery leaving for whatever reason, and I'm still not sure I understand what the explanation was, is a big deal. He's a significant blue chip player. As far as Coach O, I think it's difficult to answer your question, and this is not one that I'm dodging because I don't think we have enough information yet. I think every game becomes very important to the fan base, and so far I think they're a little bit underwhelmed. The next critical game is Mississippi State on the road. You know, if he can get a win there, I think he quiets everyone down. But if that game goes the wrong way, then suddenly he has lost two games that fans and media did not expect him to lose before the season. And that's before you take a look at the schedule, which is brutal. We're talking about LSU hosting Florida. You have A&M, you have Alabama, you have Auburn, and Ole Miss. So the possibility is very difficult. So I just cannot make that call right now. I think this is not Clay Helton, who has been on the hot seat for 3 or 4 years. I mean, Ed Ogeron 2 seasons ago won the national championship. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Let's check out Mike in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Hey, Paul, hope you're doing well today.
Thank you, Mike.
Just a quick comment and question. First off, with Clay Helton being fired, Ole Miss better be careful. Everybody in Knoxville knows that USC's Lane Kiffin's dream job. Just kidding.
How many times can Lane Kiffin go to Southern Cal is my question.
I'm kidding. I'm sure he won't. Listen, wanted to talk about volunteer football really quick. I thought this past week was one of the biggest games and for UT this season, just based on the trajectory of the program. Do you see any way that UT gets to 6-6 this year?
I think it's very difficult now based on what we saw Saturday. And I'll see if we can call the schedule up in a minute, the Tennessee schedule, and try to evaluate, because I think there were a couple of tweener games, and those game, and Pittsburgh was. I mean, that was a 50-50 game that I felt like
Absolutely.
Tennessee. So, okay, one game down. I don't see Florida. I think Florida, Missouri are losses. So that's, if you start adding it up, that's 3 losses. Alabama's 4, Georgia's 5. So then we move around and come back. South Carolina, that's a toss-up game. Ole Miss, I don't think is a toss-up game, but it's still a game that Tennessee could win. At Kentucky, now, there you go. I think I may have missed that one the last time around. So I see 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think it's going to be very difficult.
Okay. Appreciate you. Thanks for taking
Not
my
impossible,
call.
But difficult. Tennessee is going to have to beat somebody they're not supposed to, whether that's a Kentucky, whether that's Missouri, Ole Miss, somebody like that. But they can't. There's not enough game. That was the game they had to win to breathe easily, and they let it get away. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Chuck is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call, and I'm your bird dog in Tennessee. We enjoyed our weekend there with the granddaughter and Peg. And I have a little different take on the game, and I'm also born and raised in Pittsburgh, and I follow Pitt day to day.
Sure.
And I think Tennessee played them even, and even outplayed them. You wouldn't believe it, Paul, but Tennessee has more speed than Pitt does. That means they should have won the game. But Milton missed about three wide open by 5 or 10 yards open receivers. And then, as one of your professional callers said earlier, they had 15 penalties in that game. Two of them, Paul, came from a left tackle on the 1 and 3 yard line when they had first and goal on the 1 and 3 and ended up getting pushed back to the 20 or 30 and kicked field goals. That was what I saw. But what I'm thinking is Pitt is a lot better than people are giving them credit for, which means that Tennessee, because they played Pitt so tight, and have actually better team speed.
Yeah, Chuck, Chuck, I agree with you, but hold on a second. Pitt may be better than we think. Tennessee may be better, but the schedule is still the schedule. And I see 4 or 5 games on their schedule. They can't win, so they have to figure out how to get victories to have a good season, and that's the challenge for them right now.
Yeah, what I would say, as you read off the schedule, Paul, if they play like they played Saturday and clean up these penalties – I mean, let's put it this way. Nick Saban would have took that left tackle out of the game, and he would have probably been on the second team next week. This coach didn't make that adjustment. You can't leave a guy in that costs you 2 field positions. But I think if they play as hard as they did against Pitt, they can beat Missouri. I'll almost make a prediction there. They can beat Missouri. So I'll give them that one.
I don't know. Chuck, thank you. I thought Missouri played pretty well the other night, even in losing. We'll have more on the firing at Southern Cal. It is worth remembering Mike Bone, the athletic director, came from Cincinnati, where he, I believe, hired Luke Fickell. That's a name I would keep my eye on, although I think you'll hear. I mean, Bob Stoops will get thrown up for that job as he gets thrown up for every other job. I don't buy that one. You'll see Matt Campbell's name. You'll see all of the usual suspects that you see for every big job mentioned. It is a prime job, though. There are not many jobs in college football like Southern Cal. We'll talk to the TOL guys about that when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Richard, of course, and Spencer, let me start with you, Spencer, on the news that Clay Helton gets fired after 2 games.
Yeah, it's week 3, Paul. it's week 3, and USC has already canned Clay Helton. They had enough. They took one sip out of the milk jug and just threw it. Even though I would say that substantively, this isn't much different than the milk's been for at least 3 years under Clay Helton. I don't know why you do it now. I don't know why the Stanford loss is any worse than any other loss that USC's had under Clay Helton. I guess they just had it. But by the way, if you get fired, this is how to do it. Make sure they issue a press release, okay? Because that thing looked copy edited, ready to go, polished. Richard just checked. He's not even on the coach's roster anymore on the website. He's been nuked from the website. They already have the interim up in the roster.
No, they were ready to rock here. This was a top-down scrub. I think, you know, we understand that when you lose to the Stanford team that played like Stanford did week one, it's going to raise some eyebrows. Spencer, I think what's interesting here is the fact that, you know, Heritage Hall, which is what we sort of call the firm behind USC, is always this sort of wildly unpredictable place. But I think it's become even more unpredictable now, given that Mike Bone, who was Cincinnati's former athletic director, is now the athletic director at USC, because he's the first outsider, so to speak, to take over USC's athletic department, basically in my lifetime. It's always been inside guys. Mm-hmm. Now you've got an outsider here, and it appears that the outsider has made the heavy-handed move by taking control of the situation. At least that's my read on it, by firing Clay Helton this quickly.
Let's talk about where they go next. They have plenty of time. Usually if you fire somebody maybe in early November to give yourself a chance, I mean, they have a lifetime to look for the next coach. It used to be that Urban Meyer was top of the list. Jacksonville fans may want him to be top of the list, but Spencer, where are they going?
I don't know why you mentioned Urban Meyer. He has a job, sir. He will be staying with that job. This rumor mongering will not stand. There's an interesting question here, because he is an outsider, but chances are Mike Bone's going to have to satisfy some internal tensions inside the program by considering USC alum, maybe if not first, but at least make them part of the process. I think somebody that they're going to look at may already be on staff. They may like what Graham Harrell is doing at offensive coordinator, and they may stay internal, especially because you said they have time. Now, time is also a chance for everyone else on that staff to audition for the job under live fire and in real time. So I would not be surprised to see somebody hired off this staff.
Yeah, I think so. First of all, it's a USC coaching search. So Jeff Fisher, Jack Del Rio,
come
on down.
Come on.
I know that Jeff Fisher, at least, is helping Eddie George out at Tennessee State. So get up to Nashville, see if he'll take the job. I joke. I kid. Trust me. But, you know, I think the obvious one-to-one connection is going to be Luke Fickell. Mike Bone, a Cincinnati guy. We know what Luke Fickell's doing at Cincinnati. I would imagine that's one of the first calls he makes. We'll see if he ends up coming on down to L.A. I don't know if that's a cultural fit, but, you know, winning is a cultural fit, so maybe USC should try that for a change. Outside of that, it's the hot guys. I mean, you know James Franklin at Penn State. He's probably going to be on that list. You know that there are some other coach. This is USC, man, and I know that USC has not been USC in the last 10 years, but for God's sakes, it's USC, and they can swing a pretty big stick when it comes to coaching searches here.
I don't know why Jeff Fisher always gets mentioned for that job. I mean, I know he went there and played there, but I'm wondering if Jeff Fisher could get a job anywhere right now.
Hey, listen, that is USC alum Jeff Fisher, and that is Super Bowl participating.
Yes,
coach.
Yes, Super Bowl entrant Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, and most importantly, rested, ready, and available, Paul. Remember, you got to be available and you got to be ready to take the job, and Jeff Fisher is both. Did I say he should get the job? Absolutely not. Don't quote me on that.
He would be cheap.
I don't know. You know what? I'm just going to say this to anyone applying for this job. I don't care if you're underqualified, overqualified, or barely alive. Overcharge. Okay, you only get one chance to get the bag. Go ahead and take it while you can.
More just like this, an hour and 8.5 minutes away. Guys, thank you very much. Thinking Out Loud, 7 p.m. and available at any bar that you want to go into. Let's continue with more phone calls here. And Steve is in Arkansas. Steve, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing fine, Paul. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
Listen, I heard you mention something earlier in your program about the Texas recruits maybe in the next couple, 3-4 years. Texas will recruit to play in the SEC. After Arkansas welcomed them to the SEC as well as they did the other night, what is the difference between the 4-star players that Texas has recruited now, the 4-star players that the SEC has, which, you know, Arkansas doesn't have that many, but they have some good ones. But what is the difference between now and then? I mean, Texas does recruit probably higher than half of the SEC does at the moment.
Yeah, no, you're right. Player to player, Texas would match up with most SEC schools, but you know, they just have to do more of that, and I think they're capable of it. They've lost some players to really good schools like Alabama and Ohio State in recent years that they simply can't do if they're going to be dominant. I think it's going to be a process, to use a cliche I hate, and I don't think after two games you can completely evaluate. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if Texas had lost to Louisiana in the opener. I mean, everyone knew they had a challenging first couple of games, but I was not as surprised by Arkansas, because I just think that was they were walking into a situation that Arkansas had been priming for at least a couple of years, or at least since Sam Pittman got there. But I think it's an impossible question to fully answer, but I feel like Texas will be ready, though.
So actually, you don't think there's a whole lot of difference between the four stars that each team has got? It's just a matter of your four star this league.
I mean, if you're playing Alabama, it's going to be difficult. But I mean, Jacksonville State, I doubt they had any two stars, and they went into Florida Correct. State, which has plenty of four and five stars. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. We've talked a lot about the Razorbacks' big win. We had Bobby Bones on earlier. We've had Greg McElroy, Shane Beamer. We'll head to Kentucky next and find out about that big win over Missouri. Chris Rodriguez Jr., you probably saw him do quite well on Saturday night.